Aloha.
Hello. How are you doing?
Aloha. Wonderful. My daughter went to Hawaii a few years ago. I have not been there. How many of you have been to Hawaii? Oh my. We need to have a group trip to Hawaii. The word aloha, we've already used it in our meditation, in our worship, because it means presence and breath. Aloha. When we say aloha, we say hello. We say welcome. We say, may divine spirit be with you. May we share the breath of life. When we leave, we say aloha. It's not just a goodbye. It's we carry a divine spirit. We carry that breath of life. I'm going to teach you a new word. Maybe. Karibu. Karibu. This is a Swahili word. Also welcome. It means, come into my home so I may learn what is on your heart. Isn't that beautiful? And I'm going to teach you another word. This is from Madagascar. Tonga Soa. Tonga Soa. May you enjoy the pleasure of coming home. If I'm a guest entering someone's house in Madagascar, it's a homecoming, even though I've never been there. I'm wearing a shirt from Madagascar. I traveled there back in 1996, I think, and helped the Lutheran churches in Madagascar celebrate an important anniversary. And the hospitality, it was unparalleled. So there were 10 or 11 of us from our Rocky Mountain region, including New Mexico. And one of the travelers, he and I were invited to stay at the home of one of the Lutheran seminary professors. And they served us chicken. It was the worst chicken in the world. But we enjoyed the hospitality, the conversation, the people, the family that we were with. We stayed there two nights. So the second night, guess what we had? Chicken. And guess what? It was still just as tough and stringy and chewy. It was like, this is no chicken I've ever had. But we loved the hospitality. The next day, we were traveling on our little bus going to another town to visit a small Lutheran church. And we were laughing about how bad the chicken was. Until our guide said, do you know that a chicken is worth a day's wage for these people? I started doing the math. Okay, if a family made $52,000 a year, that's $1,000 a week. That's $200 for a chicken dinner. How many times have we put out $200 or $400 or $800 for a guest two nights in a row? So I learned to pay attention, not to the food, but the intention of the welcome, of the hospitality, right? I'm going to be talking about hospitality and the elements of hospitality today, because as both a former pastor and as a pastoral counselor, family therapist, I became concerned in my ministry and then my counseling practice that some of our brothers and sisters within the larger faith traditions were using biblical texts to limit families. The husband has to be the head of the wife and the head of the household. The wife has to be quiet and serve the husband. Children, what are they supposed to do?
Be seen and not heard.
That's right. Be seen and not heard. Obey the parents. And because I was working with so many different constellations of families, I performed a wedding for a lesbian couple. That was before I did another wedding for a lesbian couple here in Santa Fe. And many of our sisters and brothers in some of these other religious expressions, divorce is a sin. I had a member of my church in Iowa say, "Pastor, you don't talk about divorce being a sin, but divorce is a sin." And I said, "No. The Bible never says divorce is a sin. Divorce is a sign of brokenness. It's our human shortcomings and failings. We haven't been able to make something work, but God still blesses people. God blesses families." So I was working with divorced families and remarried families and step-parenting, and I'm still scratching my head going, "Okay, Victor, you're a pastor, you're a theologian. Why can't you find something in the Bible that supports families besides just husbands do this, wives do this, children do this?" And then I came across Genesis 18. Abraham and Sarah, probably about my age or older, Abraham is outside and he looks up and he sees three strangers coming down the road. And you may know the story. He runs out to greet them. And then he bows down on the ground and then welcomes them to his tent. And he says, "Sarah, we need some food for these travelers." So they put on a feast, a meal. They talk. That's when the men say, "We came here to tell you, Sarah, that you're going to have a baby." And you remember what Sarah did? She laughed. It's like, "I'm a grandma without having ever had children, but I'm the age of a grandma. I'm going to have a child?" And then they finish their time together. Abraham walks them on their way so that he can say, "Don't go to the south. The people down there are not very friendly. Go to the oasis that is more toward the west here. You'll be safer and you'll find water better." We don't know what he said to the people, but he helped them on their way. Those five elements of hospitality I began applying to families. How we welcome each other. How we provide safety. Abraham bowing down, he exposed the back of his neck, a very vulnerable part of our body, saying, "I'm not a threat to you." Our pet dogs will do something like that, you know, when they are being submissive or passive. And then we nurture people in families, the food that Sarah put on the table. Then we equip people in our families to help them prepare for the next step of their journey, and then we bless them as they go on their way. Now, Abraham may not have blessed these three travelers because they had already blessed him. The sacred practice of hospitality was so important in those ancient times because, you know, they didn't have Google and they weren't on their devices and they didn't pull up, you know, the news feeds. The only information they had from the outside world was from a traveler. So you did not turn away a traveler. You did not hurt the traveler. You cared for the traveler because that was your connection to the outside world. So I want us to think today, those words, welcome, safety, nurture, equipping, and blessing. Now, a way you might remember this is, we shall never erect barriers. All right? Same letters. We shall never erect barriers. So let's talk about how this plays out in a family. You may already understand this very well. Most people do. The most stressful times in a family are whenever somebody enters or leaves. Okay? The birth of a child is a great celebration, but holy mackerel, the family has to change in order to welcome a new member. The death of somebody in the family, it creates a lot of stress because of all the change that happens. In high school, before I had ever thought about being a pastor or a therapist, I read an article, and I, to this day, am confused. Saturday Evening Post, I couldn't find it online. I've looked for years. Or Life Magazine, my mom got both of those. It was a short article. A psychologist was saying, there's a really difficult time in a family when children come home from school, and the children are fussy and irritated, and so give them a snack. Okay, it made sense to me until I started working with families. And what I've learned, there are 3 hours of the day that are the most stressful hours for a family. The hour in the morning when people are waking up, getting breakfast, getting ready to go to school or go to work. That hour before dinner, coming home after work, after school, scrambling around. And what would the third be? The hour before bedtime. You know, where kids may not want to go to bed, they're not ready to go to bed. What would you guess is the most stressful of those 3 hours? 1, 2, or 3? How many would say 1? The morning and the hour in the morning? Okay. How about the hour before dinner and the hour before bed? Yeah. So I started rethinking this thing. Do we give kids snacks because it's all stressful? No. You welcome them. And what I had client families do, mom, dad, when the kids come home, spend 10 minutes connected with your kids. Engage them. How was your day? What was the best part of your day? How did you handle a challenge today? 10 minutes of welcome, no conflict. You didn't even have to give the kids a snack, but you often did. How would you apply that in the morning when people are waking up? It's time to get out of bed. I've called you 3 times already. Get out. That's not a welcome. Oh, I can't wait to share this day with you. I can sit on the bed with my son, daughter, grandkids. I can sit there and say, oh, I can't wait for you to wake up. It's going to be such a great day. We're going to do some fun things together. A welcome. Nighttime, especially for young children, is very stressful because they are leaving. Right? They're going to that place where they're all alone and it's dark and they might have a bad dream. So that's not a welcome time. That's a blessing time. The assurance of safety and blessing, the bedtime story, but just the reminders. You're going to be safe here. We've got a great bed for you to snuggle in. Mom and Dad love you. We bless people in those stressful times. And guess what? My experience was those families had less problem with stressors when they started practicing hospitality. Safety. We shall never erect barriers. Safety. Families need to know everybody's safe here. The counseling center that I developed in Utah, we developed a program where we treated violent offenders. Lots of domestic violence incidents. So we worked with the men We worked with their victims, and we developed a very unique program treating children who had witnessed violence in their families. So we taught safety. How do we teach safety in the family? Things like, use good words. We don't use bad words, and we're not mean to each other. We want to say nice things to each other. I had a client, a divorced dad, newly divorced, 3 children, and he hadn't been very engaged as a parent, but every other weekend, now he's got 3 children, and he goes, Vic, I don't know what to do with the kids. I said, okay, think about this. What do you do for a living now? Well, I'm an EMT. Yeah, really. What could you do with kids that you could teach them something about safety? And they go, oh, well, I'm not going to, like, do CPR classes and stuff like that. They're too young to really understand all that. But I said, what do you like to do? What do the kids, well, we like to be outdoors. Oh, do you go on hikes? Yeah, we'd like to go up on hikes in the mountains. This is northern Utah. I said, here's an idea. When you go on a hike, each child gets a piece of paper, and you decide what pretend injury that child's going to get today. And then somewhere on the hike, you know, the daughter goes, oh, Dad, I hurt my leg. I can't walk. So now the other kids have to learn, how do you take care of somebody when they're on a hike? The kids started getting competitive. Oh, I broke my arm. I can't move it, you know. So it was a great opportunity where the kids, the dad, were creating this connection of parenting around safety, how to teach safety. Think about the symbols of safety we may have in our home. Peace to all who enter here. Many of our homes will have that somehow, somewhere. The welcome mat, you know, that's nice. But even the way, maybe it's a picture on the wall, you know, but we want people to know, you're going to be safe here. We shall never erect barriers. So now, nurturing. The nurturing part of the hospitality spans lifetimes. So as parents, we have to nurture our children when they're young so that they develop the foundation to grow into the next level of their development, on and on and on. Now, when people get to be my age, 18, we also need nurturing. You know, how do we support the aging process? People who are looking at final chapters and legacies, and what do we leave behind? So starting from infancy all the way to old age, families find ways to nurture. Yes, food, of course, we feed, but we nurture a spirit. We teach emotional well-being. You know, we develop confidence, help our children develop confidence in themselves. We shall never erect barriers. We're going to nurture the people in our family. How do we equip people? I remember a situation, I don't know the exact age, but I think it was my daughter first. My son was older, so it was either my daughter or my son. Somewhere about middle school, early high school. Oh, I don't have any clean clothes. Why didn't the laundry get done? Oh, come with me. Let's take a tour of the laundry room. And here's how you work the clothes washer. And you mean I have to do my own laundry? Well, if you're out of clothes that you want, yeah, now you know how to do it. Teaching the kids how to develop a life skill. Well, we develop all kinds of life skills from younger ages all the way into our adult years. We equip people for the next step of their journey. So with a lot of the clients and even church members, I did many church retreats with young people, youth groups, and it was really interesting. Sometimes the kids would come well prepared. They had their, you know, packs all, they got their clothes, they've got their toothbrush, everything they need for a retreat. But then other kids, they came with the wrong stuff. It was like, oh, you haven't learned how to pack for a trip yet. Even that is a symbolic but a practical way of helping people get equipped for the next part of their journey. I did a lot of backpacking in Utah, and we had backpacked the Uinta Mountains, a group of us, and we were coming out a day early. This was in June, but snow was coming in. We were up at 10,000 feet, and as we got back to the trailhead, there's a scout group coming in, and the boys had taken garbage bags, cut the slot, put it over their head. They are going into the backcountry with garbage bags. Some were carrying plastic garbage bags with a sleeping bag. We talked to the scoutmaster. Do you realize it's going to get bad here, and you're going to have kids really facing exposure? And the scoutmaster said, oh, if it gets bad, we'll just find a hole to crawl into. I've done a lot of trips with young people in the wilderness. You never would say that about bad weather, snowstorms coming in. Oh, we'll just find a hole to crawl into. We'll wait it out. Equipping people for the next part of their journey. My grandmother did it. You know how she equipped us when we left her house? Cookies. Here's a snack for the road. Yeah. And then finally, blessing. Blessing becomes all that important time. And again, it becomes so critical at those times of change and transition in a family. So it's like, how and when do we bless? Well, anytime somebody enters the family, we welcome them, but we also bless them. You know, we want God's very best divine presence in their lives. And when somebody is getting ready to leave, how do we bless them? Well, blessing means we want the very best that God can shed on your life. And so when people are leaving the family, yes, death, the sad time, but going off to college, getting married, even going to camp, you know, as a kid, we still bless them. Yeah. So what do? We never erect barriers. We should never, we shall never erect barriers. We carry that welcome, hospitality. We carry the safety with us. We nurture the people around us. And then we help equip them for the next step of their journey and bless them on the way. Aloha. Aloha. Amen.